Welcome to the Verity Podcast for Friday, April 26, 2024, where we separate the spin from the facts. I'm Scott Wallace.
And I'm Melissa Topshire with today's headlines. Harvey Weinstein's 2020 rape conviction is overturned.
Burkina Faso's army is accused of killing 223 civilians.
Officials say the U.S. secretly shipped long-range missiles to Ukraine.
SCOTUS hears arguments over Trump's immunity claim.
Rudy Giuliani and Mark Meadows are indicted in the Arizona election interference case.
Haitian Prime Minister Ariel Henry resigns.
Spain's Prime Minister halts public duties.
Meta's shares drop as it reveals its spending plans.
Anthony Fauci agrees to testify before Congress again.
And 282 million people are reported to have experienced acute hunger in 2023.
Weinstein's rape conviction is overturned. Here are the facts as agreed upon by BBC News, Fox News, NBC, and the New York Post. In a 4-3 decision, the New York Court of Appeals, the state's highest court, voted to overturn Harvey Weinstein's 2020 rape conviction. Weinstein was convicted of and sentenced to 23 years in prison for sexual assaults in 2006 and 2013. However, the court ruled his trial wrongly allowed witnesses to make accusations against him that didn't relate to the case. The court said the trial court compounded that error by allowing a defendant with no criminal history to be cross-examined about those allegations, as well as numerous allegations of misconduct that portrayed the defendant in a highly prejudicial light. While the trial court at the time said it was looking to see if the other female witnesses' testimonies would help the jurors find intent, Weinstein's attorneys at the time argued that it would prejudice the jury. With the now-thrown-out conviction, which was made during former Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance's time in office, current DA Alvin Bragg will have to decide whether or not to retry Weinstein for the same charges. Weinstein was also convicted of and sentenced to 16 years in prison for rape in Los Angeles, California in 2022.
Oh, thanks for those surprising facts, Melissa. We have a narrative A on this story from the New York State Court of Appeals. Under the protection of the U.S. Constitution, every American criminal defendant has the right to face only the specific charges laid against them in a particular trial. It is unfair, therefore, to include unrelated accusations of prior misbehavior. Due to these inadmissible testimonies included in the trial, Weinstein's right to testify under fair questioning was also violated.
And here's narrative B from Axios. While the court's majority has laid out some reasonable legal claims, this ruling is a serious setback in the fight to protect women from dangerous sexual predators. Sex crimes are well known to be far more complex than other crimes, and it appears the court doesn't understand the nuanced nature of Harvey Weinstein's trial. This is a sad day for those who Weinstein victimized. Harvey's kind of a cool name.
He's a strong name, yeah. I don't know what happened to Harvey.
Wasn't there a Batman character?
That's, Harvey Dent, his Two-Face.
Harvey Dent.
Yeah.
Strong one.
Yeah. The first time I remember hearing Harvey, I believe it was the announcer from Double Dare was named Harvey.
Oh.
You know, like Mark Summers would throw it like, hey, Harvey, what are they winning? Or something like that. Oh, they're winning some pair of British Knights. How about that?
Those are shoes, right?
Yeah. For some reason, every Nickelodeon show, like, oh, all our contestants get a pair of British Knights. I've never heard of British Knights before or after that Nickelodeon time period, but I heard about them a lot. You know, whoever secured that deal at Nickelodeon, like making them the official shoe of all Nickelodeon shows,
that
worked out. I guess maybe, or I never bought British Knights, though, so I don't know. I didn't really have a lot
true.
Of purchasing power.
Yeah. So, BK Knights.
Burkina Faso's army killed 223 civilians. Here are the facts as agreed upon by The Guardian, Human Rights Watch, Sky News, Washington Post, The Hindu, and ABC News. According to a Human Rights Watch report published on Thursday, Burkina Faso's troops have killed 223 civilians in attacks on two villages accused of collaborating with suspected Islamist militants. The mass executions, which allegedly included 56 children, occurred in the Nandine and Soro villages in the northern Yatanga province on February 25th. The residents claim the killings were carried out in response to an Islamist militant's attack on a military camp outside the nearby provincial capital of Wahiguya. However, the country's military junta hasn't commented on the allegations. The rights group contends the alleged massacre is part of the country's counterinsurgency campaign and called for international support to launch an investigation into possible crimes against humanity. Last November, an army attack on another village reportedly killed at least 70 people. The military blamed the residents for colluding with Islamist militants to kill the soldiers. Since jihadists linked to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State group first attacked Burkina Faso 9 years ago, over 20,000 people have been reportedly killed, and the junta has lost about half of the country's territory to suspected insurgents.
Thank you for the facts, Scott. We'll start these spins with a narrative A from First Post. The latest massacre proves that Burkina Faso's military junta has lost all respect for protecting civilian well-being. Under the guise of fighting terrorism, the regime repeatedly carries out atrocities against civilians to demonstrate its power and intimidate the people. Meanwhile, violent Islamists are on the rise since the country turned away from the West and embraced Russia. The suffering population deserves the regime to be held accountable for its crimes against humanity.
World Socialist website counters with narrative B. Interestingly, Burkina Faso only makes the headlines when scores of people are killed in the conflict-ridden country. Western organizations then prefer to blame the government, although it's doing its utmost to protect the population from Islamist terror. It must also be noted that it was the West's military interventions in Libya and Mali that destabilized the entire region. Against all odds, Burkina Faso will continue to fight for the security and freedom of its people.
And we have a nerd narrative from the Metaculous prediction community that says there's a 40% chance that Burkina Faso will experience a civil war before 2036. Officials say the U.S. secretly shipped long-range missiles to Ukraine. Here are the facts as agreed upon by BBC News, the Associated Press, and IISS. Earlier this month, Ukraine secretly received U.S.-made long-range missile systems that are capable of striking targets as far as 186 miles away, American officials confirmed on Wednesday. The weapons known as the Long-Range Army Tactile Missile Systems, or ATACMS, have already been used in at least two attacks, U.S. officials said, including the bombing of a Russian airfield in Crimea last week. Ukraine had started receiving a more limited version of ATACMS as early as October 2023. However, those weapons, while capable of firing cluster munitions, each carrying 950 bomblets, only have a 100-mile range. On Wednesday, U.S. Department of State spokesman Vedant Patel made the announcement stating, "I can confirm that the U.S. provided Ukraine with long-range ATACMS at the president's direct direction." The U.S. did not announce this at the onset in order to maintain operational security for Ukraine at their request, he added. The announcement came shortly after U.S. President Joe Biden signed into law a $95 billion military spending bill that will send $61 billion of weaponry to Ukraine, with the rest going to Israel, Taiwan, and other regions. Biden also authorized the immediate release of $1 billion in military aid to Ukraine. Jake Sullivan, the U.S. National Security Advisor, confirmed the latest package will also include long-range ATACMS. Quote, "We've already sent some. We will send more now that we have additional authority and money," he said.
Thanks, Melissa. The Associated Press brings us the pro-establishment narrative. Ukraine has long sought after long-range ATACMS. Meanwhile, White House and military planners have carefully considered the risks associated with providing the weapon. And they've decided this is the right time. If used properly, it can knock out Russian troops and logistics further back from the front lines and turn around Ukraine's fortunes in the war.
And here's the pro-Russia narrative from TASS. Ukraine has already used more limited weapons to launch a series of terror attacks on Russian territory. Now that the U.S. has provided Kyiv with long-range ATACMS, Russia can only expect these terror attacks to continue and escalate. Now more Russian cities are in danger. Crimea is in range. Russia will have no choice but to respond, and it will have no impact on the mess that the U.S. left Ukraine in.
And a nerd narrative from Metaculus, there's a 28% chance there will be a large-scale armed conflict in Russia before 2030. This is feeling a little bit like it could be the Archduke Ferdinand moment. I'm just keeping my eye out for it. Yeah.
Yeah, things are definitely unstable.
If you're going to secretly send missiles that you're not supposed to, keep it a secret. That's my advice.
So then what's the presumption if you are overtly not keeping it a secret?
I don't know. Sometimes wives like drop clues about where they want to go to dinner, then the husband can figure it out themselves type thing. Like, oh, you knew that I wanted to go to Olive Garden. How did you know? Oh, that's wonderful. And yeah, that somehow means more opposed to just saying like, hey, I want to go to Olive Garden, stupid.
You're
like,
yeah, you picked up the clue.
So maybe that's what's going on. We want them to know, but we don't want it to seem like we want them to know. But we know that they know. I don't know. It seems pretty bad.
Yeah, I agree with you there. This is not good news.
SCOTUS deliberates on Trump's presidential immunity claim. Here are the facts as agreed upon by CBC, NBC, ABC, and the Associated Press. The United States Supreme Court on Thursday heard arguments over former President Donald Trump's claims to immunity for acts carried out while in office, with Chief Justice John Roberts among justices who suggested the case could be sent back to a lower court. If Trump, the presumptive Republican nominee for the 2024 presidential election, is granted immunity, Special Counsel Jack Smith's prosecution of Trump for allegedly conspiring to overturn President Joe Biden's 2020 presidential election win would end. Previously, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit in February rejected Trump's immunity claim by a 3-0 vote. While the justices seemed skeptical about Trump's claims of blanket immunity, some conservative justices, including Justice Amy Coney Barrett, devoted much of their questioning to determining what acts could be considered Trump's private or official acts. Trump didn't attend the proceedings, but prior to entering the courtroom for his Manhattan trial, he reiterated his claims of immunity, saying, "If you don't have immunity, you're not going to do anything. You're just going to become a ceremonial president." If the justices rule within the next couple of months, a trial could start this summer, but if they send it back to lower courts, holding a trial before the November election would be unlikely.
Axios brings us an anti-Trump narrative. The conservative justices seem to be stretching to find ways they could grant Trump some immunity or reasons to bump this case back to the lower court. Either choice would be a victory for the former president because, as in all his criminal cases, Trump's goal is to delay all trials until he might be elected or inaugurated as president and can quash them all.
The pro-Trump narrative comes from Daily Caller. This isn't about delaying the case. It's about making sure a president has the necessary freedom to act without fear of prosecution. It's easy for any prosecutor to obtain an indictment, and the U.S. system can't rely on all prosecutors acting in good faith. There may need to be a test to determine which acts by a president are personal or official, which is one thing that might be better settled by a lower court.
And Metaculus brings us the nerd narrative, saying there's a 50% chance that the D.C. federal criminal trial of Trump will begin in September 2025.
So Trump is not allowed to attend this case because he's stuck in New York, not able to leave for the other thing that's going on.
Yes.
I feel like if you're being tried by the Supreme Court, you should be able to go.
You're needed. You should be there.
Let's do something. It's kind of the same way I feel when, you know, Anthony Hopkins is winning the Oscar, but he's in somewhere filming another movie. You should be able to come back to win your Oscar.
Yeah. Can we take a day off?
Especially if it's in the same purview. Like, you're filming a movie. The whole point is to win the Oscar. You should be able to go get your Oscar. You're being tried by the Supreme Court. The whole point is that you're being held to stand trial.
Apparently
you should be able to go.
Apparently that happened to Goldie Hawn. She won her Oscar and she was in Europe filming another movie and she didn't even know.
She didn't even know? Whoa.
No, they like call her and be like, hey, you won the Oscar.
That's a pretty awesome flex that like, I'm so busy making other art that I can't even accept my laudits for this first thing I did.
Yeah. Giuliani and Meadows are among the indicted in the Arizona election interference case. Here are the facts as agreed upon by the Associated Press, the New York Times, USA Today, CBS, and The Independent. 18 people, including Rudy Giuliani and former Trump White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, on Wednesday were indicted by an Arizona grand jury for their roles in an alleged attempt to overturn President Joe Biden's win in the 2020 presidential election. Among those in the indictment, which was released Wednesday, were Kelly Ward, who was state GOP chair up until last year, and Senator Anthony Kern, who's currently running for U.S. Congress from the state. Trump wasn't charged, but was named as an unindicted co-conspirator. 11 of the defendants who are accused of taking part in the so-called fake electors scheme face charges over signing documents claiming to be legitimate electors for Trump, despite Biden's victory in the state, in addition to other charges. Arizona Democratic Attorney General Chris Mays said the results of her 13-month investigation show she will not allow American democracy to be undermined. Arizona is one of several states with similar cases, including Michigan and Georgia. In addition, Trump is in the midst of a trial over charges he falsified business documents in New York, and the U.S. Supreme Court on Thursday heard arguments over his claims of presidential immunity.
Thanks, Melissa. The anti-Trump narrative spin comes from MSNBC. The fake elector scheme is one of the most shocking political scandals of the millennium. It's about time those who participated are having to face the music. In addition to Arizona and other states that have already indicted these would-be usurpers of democracy, there are several investigations ongoing in other states. These cases are important for preventing a similar scheme in the future.
And here's the pro-Trump narrative from Breitbart. These defendants were earnestly exercising their right to object to an election result they believed was rigged and should not face criminal charges. But the Democrats are again weaponizing the legal system to target Trump and his allies just after a poll showing the former president soundly beating Biden in the battleground states. This witch hunt knows no bound.
And a nerd narrative from Metaculus, there's a 33% chance that Trump will be convicted of at least one count in his federal court cases before the end of 2024. Haitian Prime Minister Ariel Henry resigns. Here are the facts, as agreed upon by The Wall Street Journal, Jamaica Observer, DW, Fox News, and NBC. The day before the council selected a new prime minister and the cabinet was to be sworn in, Haitian Prime Minister Ariel Henry signed a resignation letter on Wednesday from Los Angeles, California. Henry wrote that his government served the nation in difficult times, adding that he sympathizes with the losses and suffering endured by our compatriots during this period. In a separate text, he said he was resigning for personal reasons. The council, whose formation was announced a month ago, is tasked with appointing a new government to deal with the island nation's growing gang violence, which killed or injured over 2,500 people between January and March. The council consists of 9 members, 7 of whom will have voting power alongside 2 observers. The group includes representatives of the island nation's political parties and civil society groups. The council will conduct its initiative with the help of interim president Michael Patrick Boisvert, who served as the country's director of tax inspection from 2010 to 2018, before assuming the role of Minister of Economy and Finance in 2020. The council's non-renewable commission reportedly expires on February 7, 2026, after which a new president is expected to be sworn into office.
Thank you for the facts, Scott. We'll start with a pro-establishment narrative from the United States Institute of Peace. This council is a very important first step towards peace in Haiti, particularly due to its inclusion of diverse public representation and outside observers. Hopefully, it will lead to broader, security-focused councils under the president that include leaders from agriculture, education, health, and other industries. The more representative Haiti's government is, the less likely it will be to fall into the hands of gangs and bad actors and align with the rules-based order.
The establishment critical narrative comes from The Intercept. For the Haitian people, this supposed transition council will be yet another feeling of deja vu. The U.S., through its international proxy, the UN, has been forcing its preferred leaders on the Caribbean island nation for the past 20 years. These pseudo-democratic initiatives have led to dictators, assassinations, and coups every time, and the West seems determined to do it again. Haiti could find peace if its people were released from this U.S. stranglehold.
And here's the nerds from Metaculus saying there's a 67% chance that Haiti will experience a coup d'etat before 2040. The Spanish Prime Minister is mulling resignation. Here are the facts as agreed upon by the New York Times, GBN, Politico, BBC, Al Jazeera, and La Vanguardia. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez on Wednesday announced in a letter posted to X, formerly Twitter, that all his public duties have been put on hold as he mulls whether to resign. The 52-year-old, who came to power 6 years ago after leading a no-confidence vote against conservative leader Mariano Rajoy, is set to announce his decision next Monday. This comes as a judge in Madrid has opened a preliminary corruption and influence-peddling investigation into Sanchez's wife, Begoña Gómez, following a criminal complaint by the Manos Limpias trade union. The anti-corruption group, however, acknowledged Thursday that its allegations could be false. They were based on media reports about links between Begoña Gómez and private companies that secured government money. Prosecutors in Madrid have requested dismissal of the case, with the appeal expected to take months to be heard in a separate court. In the meantime, the investigation into Begoña Gómez remains sealed. If Sanchez reigns, his government would enter into caretaker status while the king conducts consultations to appoint a new leader. New early elections would take place 2 months later if the candidate fails to secure enough support.
Thanks, Melissa. El País brings us the left narrative spin. As if ad hominem attacks against the prime minister weren't enough, ultra-conservatives in Spain have decided to launch a baseless lawfare campaign against Sanchez's family. This level of toxicity in politics may be too much even for a political survivor such as Sanchez.
Vaz Media brings us the right narrative. Begoña Gómez has not been formally indicted yet, so Sanchez's reaction to the investigation certainly sounds an alarm, especially as a corruption case in his government, the Coldo case, has just been unveiled.
And a nerd narrative from Metaculus. There's a 20% chance that Spain will announce a snap general election before January 1st, 2025. Meta's stock plunges amid its AI spending plan. Here are the facts as agreed upon by BBC News, MarketWatch, Australian Financial Review, Sky News, and Daily Mail. Tech platform Meta's shares dropped nearly 19% Wednesday, wiping out around $200 billion in market value after it increased its 2024 cost forecast to $35 to $40 billion because of its ventures into artificial intelligence and its metaverse. First quarter results for the Facebook, WhatsApp, and Instagram parent company showed its future spending rising from its earlier $30 to $37 billion range. During an update, Meta Chief Executive Officer Mark Zuckerberg highlighted a $3 billion rise in AI spending alone, expressing confidence the company could become the globe's leading AI firm. While Meta reportedly beat market expectations by earning $4.71 a share on revenue of $36.5 billion, it ended up disappointing investors, including on its sales outlook. Meta has reportedly been enhancing its ad buying products by integrating AI tools to increase revenue growth. It's also integrating AI into its social media, including chat assistants. Meta's shares have risen around 40% this year, partly due to extensive cost-cutting measures. Meta's ChatGPT rival Llama was recently unveiled to select users.
Thank you, Scott. Here's narrative A from Investors Business Daily. Overall, Meta stock has surged this year. There may be some volatility caused by Wednesday's update, but that's the cost of doing business. With ad sales expected to continue growing, and Zuckerberg still at the helm, Meta has a bright future.
Here's narrative B from the New York Times. Zuckerberg and Meta's responsibility is to the shareholders, who aren't totally trustful of the near future and investment in AI. The company's lower-than-expected revenue and its announced increased spending on AI have Meta on shaky ground that may require a course correction.
And the nerds are at it again from Metaculus, saying there's a 20% chance that Meta will report 1 billion active users by December 31st, 2031.
If I had any friends, and if those friends were on Facebook sharing earnestly about their life, then Facebook would be amazing.
Yeah, but, yeah, that's where it went wrong. Is it if like I hardly see my friends up there anymore? Is this a random like third party friends of friends, and then ads. And it's like, well, if I actually got to see what my friends were up to and family on a regular basis,
right?
All of them.
And it's
a
lot of people in our business trying to market to other people that are in our business, which
it very
I find
quickly becomes
really
just
dumb.
People whoring themselves out. Yeah.
Like most of my Facebook feed is people that I met in voiceover classes over the years trying to like sell their crummy voiceover thing that I already know that they're not any good because I was in the class with them.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about the teacher. Like the people in the class are
other
now
people.
Trying to sell their own stupid
bunch
thing.
Bunch of
you
nerd
know?
Buckets. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not good. Yeah. But I don't know why. Why would you market that to me? Like, what are you doing? And the answer is they have no idea what they're doing.
Exactly.
Like if they don't know how to market their thing, what are the odds the actual thing they're marketing is any good? Answer is not so good.
Yeah. Fauci will testify before Congress again. Here are the facts as agreed upon by the New York Post, the Washington Post, Fox News, and Georgetown University. Former head of the U.S. National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, or NIAID, Anthony Fauci, is slated to testify again before the House Select Subcommittee on the coronavirus pandemic on June 3rd. This will be the first time Fauci publicly has testified about the government's response to COVID since he retired almost 1.5 years ago. He will be questioned by some of his most notable critics, including Representatives Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia and Ronny Jackson of Texas. Fauci did testify in a private hearing in January, during which he stated that the 6 feet apart social distancing guideline sort of just appeared, according to committee chairman Brad Wenstrup, Republican of Ohio. Fauci is expected to answer similar questions surrounding social distancing, as well as millions of dollars in NIAID grants given to EcoHealth Alliance to study the coronavirus at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Wenstrup also said the committee will hold a separate hearing with EcoHealth Alliance President Peter Daszak on May 1st to discuss the origins of COVID. Committee ranking member Representative Raul Ruiz, Democrat of California, has pushed back against his GOP colleagues, arguing that Fauci is a dedicated public servant who stepped up during the pandemic. He also claimed the Republicans' investigation was a wasteful fishing expedition.
Thanks, Melissa. The New York Post brings us narrative A. Anthony Fauci has prevented thousands of doctors from speaking the truth during the pandemic. The policies he pushed for that we now know were wrong include locking down schools, wearing masks, and demonizing potentially effective treatments. If the government believed in justice, it would investigate him for his deadly failures.
Georgetown University brings us narrative B. Fauci was a hero throughout his nearly 4 decades at the helm of the NIAID. After beginning his career with groundbreaking work during the HIV/AIDS pandemic, which saved an estimated 25 million lives globally, Fauci ended his tenure by orchestrating America's historic response to COVID. Through his push for rapid data collection and vaccine research, he guided the country through one of its darkest periods.
And a nerd narrative from Metaculus, there is a 28% chance of recurring virus-driven lockdowns during the period 2030 to 2050.
Do you think it's going to be it's going to be a weather prediction by 2050? It's like, oh, the COVID's high today, so let's just make sure we stay inside and we'll do everything online.
I do, honestly. There was an article yesterday that the post-World War II world as we knew it is ending.
Oh, right.
And I feel like long, long from now, when the history books are written, oh, it's the Bronze Age, and it was the exact same from this year. This 500-year period was the same. No, it wasn't, but we just kind of mush it all together. Like, oh, it's the Bronze Age. There you
right.
go.
Right. That's too much to focus in on. Yeah.
I feel like when the history books are written, that post-World War II to about now is going to end up being a thing. You know, and I don't know if it's now or 20 years from now, the rock and roll age or whatever you want to call
right.
the thing
oh, that'd
that was
be
that
a good
period.
Age. Yeah.
The mass media age or something.
Mm. Do you think it's going to be labeled by the end of the era? I mean, because that's totally
different. No, it's going to be called like the Limp Bizkit age. They're going to screw it up and say it's the wrong one.
The hot dog flavored water age.
Yeah, like that was as known by everybody. Like that's what it was called. So
at least we get something from the 90s to represent this entire period of history.
They're going to screw because I bet you there's plenty of people like bronze. Who cares about bronze? Like, what are you talking about? Like,
yeah.
But I do feel like that's. You know, by that 2050, the world's going to look different. And it may even be that now the past 5 years, maybe this is actually the beginning of the new era and we ended it. The old era is already over, but we just don't know it yet.
Yeah.
You know, and
where do
be
you
like,
think we ended it with AI? When AI started?
No, I mean, honestly, in the history books, it'll be like 9/11 or something, even though there
was
a long
of the end.
Tail period after that. But if you really put a point on it, that's probably what it's going to say. It might even be like social media or it might even be the internet is what they say is like the thing that changed it by the time it got big, because the internet just gets looped in with. And I'm talking about zooming out like hundreds of years, like when they really zoom way out. It'll be like, oh, they invented the computer, you know.
Yeah.
Limp Bizkit invented the computer and everything went to crap. And that's how it went, you know.
Yeah. It's like the cotton gin. But yeah,
that's right.
The internet.
Like they say, like the 60s. Both. The real 60s lasted from 1967 to 1974. Like what we think of the 60s is not even the 60s.
It's, right. This kind of civil rights push.
This other thing.
Yeah.
So we may, I think it's going to end up being, it'll be like the turn of the millennium is what they, you know, oh, the year 2000 when everything changed or whatever.
Yeah. Y2K, you know.
Like they talk about 2050. By 2050, we will be well and truly into the next thing. Like whatever that is, like, oh, every Wednesday you have to stay inside because there's a solar flare. You know,
and I will be well and truly sitting in Spain or somewhere even warmer.
It'll probably be Siberia because of the solar flare. You'll want to you'll have bought some cheap land in Siberia, like in Mad Men.
I was going to say Iceland, but it'll probably be underwater.
Yeah. That's too nice right now already. You have to go to somewhere that's not nice now.
Right. Yeah. Siberia will be the
like
spot.
In one of the characters in Mad Men buys a brownstone on the Upper West Side of New York and everyone's making fun of her for it. Because why would you buy something there, you idiot? Like that's the frontier. That's no man's land. But we all as viewers know like, oh my God, that's good.
Yeah, like, she's like, I'm just going to hang on to it for 7 years.
Oh, my God, that's going to be worth like $100 million. And she's buying it for like $1,000 right now or something.
No.
And we all know. So I think right now, if someone was watching Mad Men of now, like buy that Siberian beachfront property because everyone will make fun of you. But well, you'll be laughing then. According to the UN Global Report on Food Crises issued on Wednesday, acute hunger affected 282 million people in 59 countries last year, which is 24 million more than in 2022. The most severe decline in food insecurity was observed in Gaza and Sudan. 2023 marked the sixth year of increasing acute food insecurity driven by conflict, extreme weather, and economic shocks. The report suggests a bleak global outlook for this year. The study was prepared by the Food Security Information Network, which includes UN agencies, the EU, governments, and non-governmental organizations. In the preface, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres wrote, "In a world of plenty, children are starving to death." 12 nations experienced deteriorating conditions resulting in the rise of populations suffering from food insecurity. Prolonged food shortages in Afghanistan, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Ethiopia, Nigeria, Syria, and Yemen added to the problem. The network released its first report in 2016. Since then, the number of individuals lacking food security has increased from 108 million to 282 million. The report also warned of worsening conditions in Haiti due to agricultural decline and political instability. It also cautioned that El Nino will continue to influence weather patterns in eastern and southern Africa.
Thank you, Scott, for those facts. Let's start the round of spins with Narrative A from Al Jazeera. Conflict and climate change are currently the leading causes of famine. Ending hostilities is very important so humanitarian aid can be securely delivered to those in need. The world is spending historic amounts of money on weapons and military systems, yet only a fraction of that could be used to end world hunger. Therefore, more financing is required to meet the increasing demand for food aid.
Narrative B comes from Fortune Europe. Nearly 300 million people worldwide are starving. The issue is not that we aren't producing enough food, we are. There is enough food to go around. The difficulty lies in availability and/or pricing. The main issue is the high distribution cost resulting from issues like export restrictions, and people in affected areas simply don't make enough money to cover the high cost of food. The problem is political and economic, and we currently lack the resolve to eradicate starvation.
And the nerds have the final say. From Metaculus, there's a 15% chance that there will be fewer than 375 million in extreme poverty by 2030. Thank you for listening to the Verity Podcast for Friday, April 26, 2024.
Each day, we use machine learning to read about 5,000 articles from about 100 newspapers and figure out which ones are about the same stories. For each major story, our editorial team then extracts both the key facts that all articles agree on and the key narratives where the articles differ.
To find out more about Verity, you can visit our website, verity.news, or download our app on the Apple App Store or Google Play. For Scott Wallace, I'm Melissa Topshire, inviting you to join us next time on Verity.